Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and they say Paul Ryan was the Ayn Rand disciple. Well, you couldn't have sounded much more like the libertarian philosopher queen than Mitt Romney did in that video that surfaced yesterday, describing nearly half the American people as lacking personal responsibility. Listen closely, because the audio is not great, as we play the fullest version of the clip that we have. And then we will talk to the head of the Ayn Rand Institute, who has a new book. The audio, as I say, is a little soft here, so listen carefully. Don't stop driving if you're on the road, but otherwise maybe stop what you're doing and move a little closer to the radio. This is from an amateur recording at a fundraiser in the home of a private equity investor in Boca Raton, Florida. Here goes.
All right, there are 47% who are with him, who are dependent upon government, who believe that they are victims, who believe that government has a responsibility to care for them, who believe that they're entitled to health care, to food, to housing, to you name it. But that's an entitlement, and government should give it to them. And they will vote for this president no matter what. And I mean, the president starts off with 48, 49, 43. He starts off with a huge number. These are people who pay no income tax.
And if you couldn't hear it, he says, all right, there are 47% who are with him, Obama, who are dependent upon government, who believe that they are victims, who believe the government has a responsibility to care for them, who believe that they're entitled to health care, to food, to housing, to you name it. That's an entitlement, and government should give it to them, and they will vote for this president no matter what. I mean, the president starts out with 48, 49. He starts out with a huge number. These are people who pay no income taxes. And then he continued.
My job is not to worry about those people. I'll never convince them that they should take personal responsibility and care for their lives. What I have to do is convince the 5 to 10% in the center.
My job is not to worry about those people. I'll never convince them they should take personal responsibility and care for their lives. What I have to do is convince the 5 to 10% in the center, said Mitt Romney on May 17th. From a recording at a fundraiser in the home of a private equity investor in Boca Raton, Florida. That was obtained by Mother Jones, by the way. Give them credit because that was their exclusive. We will talk about that and more now with my guest, Yaron Brook, president of the Ayn Rand Institute, which studies and promotes the late author's thinking. His own new book is called Free Market Revolution, How Ayn Rand's Ideas Can End Big Government. Some of you may remember that Yaron was last with us in a debate series that I hosted last year between the Ayn Rand Institute and the liberal think tank Demos. Yaron, welcome back to WNYC.
Thanks for having me on.
This language of Mitt Romney's, would you describe it as Randian?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I think it might be influenced. Look, he's identifying, I think, what is a real problem. There is a certain entitlement mentality among many Americans that, you know, one could argue about the numbers. And he's arguing that this is bad. It's bad for the country. And I think where he makes a mistake is, in a sense, giving up on them. I think the argument needs to be to them. Look, you're as much victims of this mentality as the people supplying you with funds, the people who are paying taxes. I think he's given up on those people. And I think that's a huge mistake that Republicans and generally people make.
Listeners, you can react to the Romney tape here from any side. Is there anybody who's kind of been undecided or a Republican who may be in that 47% who's turned off by this? Or do you say that, hey, this is just a bad use of language and don't worry about it? Or anything you want to say, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. From what I gather, Yaron, Ayn Rand may have said very similar things about a 47% of the population who are, quote, dependent on government, who believe that they are victims, who believe the government has a responsibility to care for them, who believe that they're entitled to health care, to food, to housing, to you name it, quoting from the Romney statement, that that's an entitlement. And these are people who pay no income taxes. I'll never convince them that they should take personal responsibility. She certainly might have used language like that to characterize even that larger segment of the American population.
Sure, right? And she would have used actually harsher language. You know, she actually used harsher language. She called them moochers and looters. But she would expand it beyond the 47%. She would include their businessmen who get favors from the government. She would include all the crony, you know, Wall Street guys who get favors from the government. So she would broaden this. And indeed, in Atlas Shrugged, many of her villains are actually businessmen. But yes, she viewed, and I think the reality is there are people out there who are working hard, who are creating, who are producing, who are taking care of their own lives. And there are other people who are not. And some of them might be innocent victims of the system. It might be circumstances that make it impossible for them. But there are others that have chosen not to take responsibility over their own lives. And a lot of that is the incentives that we've created in the system. We pander to them. We tell them not to worry, be happy. If you don't save for retirement, we're there to take care of you. If you don't have a job, we're there to compensate you. You know, if you can't afford health care, the government will step in. So we've created a system that incentivizes the entitlement mentality, and that's, I think, what Ayn Rand would have really been advocating against.
David Brooks, in his column today, is very critical of Romney and the Republican Party, which tends to be Brooks's party, on this mindset. And he practically calls it Randian thinking without quite using her name, which he doesn't. But listen to his description here. He writes, the Republican Party, and apparently Mitt Romney too, has shifted over toward a much more hyper-individualistic and atomistic social view, from the Reagan-esque language of common citizenship to the libertarian language of makers and takers. And I think you were just talking about makers and takers. There's no way the country will trust the Republican Party to reform the welfare state if that party doesn't have a basic commitment to provide a safety net for those who suffer for no fault of their own. And he continues, the final thing the comment suggests is that Romney knows nothing about ambition and motivation. The formula he sketches is this. People who are forced to make it on their own have drive. People who receive benefits have dependency. I mean, that's extremely Randian, isn't it? People who are forced to make it on their own have drive. People who receive benefits have dependency.
Well, I would argue, though, and here I'd agree with some of the research Thomas Sowell has done, that many people who become dependent become institutionalized into a certain mentality, and they lose their ambition. So Rand said that the biggest victims of statism, the biggest victims of the entitlement state, are the ambitious poor, are the poor that do have that drive, and that drive is suppressed, whether it's through regulations that make it impossible for them to break out, minimum wages that don't allow them to get a job, or whether it's through just the fact that they get a check from the government and therefore are told, in a sense, implicitly, don't worry, be happy. But in terms of the Republican Party, I wish David Brooks was right. I wish there was so-called hyper-individualism in the Republican Party. This tape was done in a fundraiser. It was appealing to a particular audience that might be more Randian than Mitt Romney is, and he was using their language more than his. I wish Mitt Romney was much more of a Randian, much more individualistic, much more pro-capitalist. I wish the Republicans had the guts to say what we really want to do over the next 20 years is wind down the welfare state to the point where, yes, there is no safety net, but they won't do that, and they don't believe in it. I mean, look, Mitt Romney and even Paul Ryan are not Randians. They've been influenced. They've read the books. They like the books. They've got some pointers, but they are not Yaron. They're not Ayn Rand. They're not where I am on these issues. I wish they were.
Yaron Brook, president of the Ayn Rand Institute. His new book, Free Market Revolution, How Ayn Rand's Ideas Can End Big Government. Hamden and Queens, you're on WNYC. Thanks for calling.
Oh, thank you for taking my call. I wanted to ask the guy from the Ayn Rand Institute, why are they the conservative movement, the libertarian movement, so against programs that are basically insurance? I mean, if, for example, Mitt Romney buys a company and has a factory and he buys fire insurance on a plant and the plant burns down, I'm sure you wouldn't, you know, object to his collecting fire insurance, on the burned down plant. Why is it when people pay into Social Security and Medicare their entire lives, 45 years of working, you pay into this insurance program, and then you're saying that somehow a person is a moocher for collecting it? Could you explain that to me?
Sure. First of all, you know, if somebody's been paying 45 years into Social Security and Medicaid, they need to get something back. The system's obviously bankrupt, so how they get back, we'll have to figure out, but they need to get that back. What I'm arguing is phasing these programs out to stop this from happening in the future, because it's a pyramid scheme. It's a wealth transfer from young people to old people, and if you don't have enough young people, then it breaks down. The whole system breaks down. Secondly, it's not insurance. Insurance is a voluntary system. Insurance is risk-based. Insurance has many characteristics. Insurance, I mean, is voluntary, so some people could buy it. And indeed, before the welfare state, before the 1930s, there were mutual aid societies in America. You could buy, in private markets, unemployment insurance. You could buy poverty insurance. You could buy insurance against poverty. So I'm all for having a robust private insurance market that guarantees, that gives us annuities for our pensions, that gives us health care, true health care insurance, not what we have today, which is a mishmash, but real private health care insurance, even insurance against poverty and these other things. But let's make it private. Let's make it voluntary. Let's not get the government sticking their hand into my pocket, taking money out because, let's say, I don't, you know, and forcing me to participate in a system that I have not chosen to participate
in. So how far would you go as a true Randian? As I recall in the third debate in our Ayn Rand versus Demos series last year, the Ayn Rand person in that debate number three, which is not you, said Social Security and Medicare should not exist, that people should save for retirement on their own, and if they fail to do so and become poor and very sick, government should not give them medical treatment, even to save their lives. I mean, that's some worldview to be, you know, the one that's inspired by a vice president, that has inspired a vice presidential nominee, at very least. Paul Ryan says he's inspired by Ayn Rand. But would you go that far in terms of policy?
So two things. You know, inspired, let's not associate particular views with somebody being inspired. You can be inspired by a novel and not agree with every particular view. But yes, I don't think there should be Social Security. I do not think there should be Medicare, and we could go on with a lot of – I think government should do one thing and one thing only, and that is protect us from crooks and criminals and fraudsters. And that's the basis on which this country, I believe, was founded, to protect individual rights, not to give stuff away, but to protect us and leave us free to pursue our own lives. Now, how do we get from where we are today to having no Social Security and Medicare? That's a complicated process, but you can't do it overnight. It's going to take a generation or two to get there. You have to phase them out slowly. You have to change people's expectations. You have to change how people think about the world so that they do save and they do, you know, buy insurance. But yes, that is, I think, the only moral, ethical system is when people are not forced to participate in systems that they are not choosing to participate in, are not forced to have their money redistributed to people that they have chosen not to give it to.
John in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, John.
Right.
John, you there?
Oh, yeah, I am. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
You know, my perspective on it is that this Romney, what he's saying is not surprising. It's not what anybody already doesn't think or say in a different way. You know, and I think that, you know, this thing at
really?
The Romney Fund. Yeah, I mean, we hear constantly from the media that the electorate is split and we're just going to the middle. And everybody's saying, no matter what you say, the other side isn't going to turn. It's 47-47. And in fact, Romney even almost says that the president gets 49 from the beginning, you know. And that's what everybody's saying in the election. I think that most people agree with that.
Well,
that
John, as a numerical analysis, I think you're right. But he attributes to that entire 47%, that's the 47% who pay no income taxes, because there are, and that's certainly something that we could debate as a society. Should the bottom 47% of income earners
pay
income taxes? But he attributes to them a lack of responsibility and an automatic vote for Obama based on that income level.
Yeah, I mean,
John respond. John, go ahead.
I think you're right, and it was callous, and all those people pay income tax anyway, but people are eating this up, what he's saying, and the real story is, you know, what's going on in Libya, you know, and that Hollywood is so bad that, you know, people in that region believe that this horrible movie on YouTube is actually a real Hollywood movie.
And that was our last topic, and we're certainly not going to neglect that one. But, John, thank you very much. Of course, that 47% figure, your own, excludes the fact that many of those paying no income tax pay payroll taxes and sales and property taxes. Some are elderly and very poor. Some are soldiers who are exempt.
I mean, I tell my Republican friends, if you will, it's a huge mistake to divide people up by classes, if you would. This is Marxism. What we should be focusing on is individualism. Individuals, right? We're individualists, supposedly.
It's an assumption of class warfare by Romney, isn't it?
And I think
that
it's
everybody
a huge
who's in the lowest 47% of incomes in the United States is going to vote for Obama.
I think that's a huge mistake. And it's not true. Look, I live in California, where a lot of very, very wealthy people who belong to the 0.001% are going to vote for Obama. This is not about class. This is about ideas. This is a struggle about ideas. This is about individuals and the choices that they make. And to give up on poor Americans because they're poor is a huge mistake. In my view, again, in Rand's view, the poor are the biggest victims of collectivism and statism and government intervention. Social Security is not a good thing for the poor. Medicare and Medicaid are not good for the poor. They would be far better off under a capitalist free market system where these social programs didn't exist. And that is the message that we need to provide them.
I want to get to one more idea from your book before we run out of time, because much of your book is a critique of the way we think of the virtue of sacrifice. And you say, as an example, we hold up Mother Teresa as a paragon of virtue, but not Pfizer. Why do you juxtapose those two?
Well, because in my view, without any question, Pfizer does more good for humanity than Mother Teresa ever did. But Pfizer benefits from the good it does to humanity because it trades, it sells drugs, and it makes a profit in the process. But yet, millions of people are better off because of Pfizer. And, you know, Pfizer's one example. Bill Gates, you could take hundreds of examples. Business generally does more good for humanity.
Not the Gates Foundation, Microsoft.
Microsoft. So business generally does more good for humanity than any Mother Teresa ever will do, than any charity will ever do. We have risen from poverty over the last 200 years because of capitalism, because of business, not because of charity. And yet they get no moral credit for it. Indeed, they get moral blame for it because they're somehow benefiting. Mother Teresa is put up as an ideal because she's giving up, because she's sacrificing. What we argue against is sacrifice. The idea of lose-win, the idea of giving without expecting in return, we believe is immoral, and that morality is about win-win situations where you pursue your own self-interest and that others benefit in the process.
30 seconds. Rand's worldview was formed in reaction to her family's freedom to conduct business being oppressed in the Soviet Union, from which she emigrated as a child. Shouldn't humanity look for truth somewhere between Soviet absolutism and Randian absolutism?
No. You don't mix poison with good. Soviet absolutism is absolutely poison. And you don't take a little bit of poison. You don't take a little bit of collectivism, a little bit of socialism, and mix it in. What we need is absolutism of the kind of the founding fathers, a limited government that protects individual rights and nothing else.
Yaron Brook, who with Don Watkins has written Free Market Revolution, How Ayn Rand's Ideas Can End Big Government. He is the president and CEO of the Ayn Rand Institute. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me on.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Up next, the original New York Times ethicist, Randy Cohen. Stay with us.